Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What female heart can gold despise? What cat's averse to fish? Thomas Gray. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. If you're a newcomer, welcome. I hope you will avail yourself of our backlog of episodes and that you will enjoy. And to my returning listeners, thank you guys. As always, your support means a lot. Please like, download, rate, subscribe, rate 5 stars, all that kind of good stuff, etc. This week, I was hoping that we would finish our look on the Balkans between 6 and 4,000 BC. However, after I was going through my notes, I noticed there's actually still several cultures that we have to get into. I'm going to try and get this done, but might be another week here. We'll see. But for that reason, because there is so much still left to discuss, we're going to go ahead and dive on into it. First, we must go back to one culture I didn't mention last week, but who was on the boundary of the Starchevo and Linear pottery cultures, and this is known as the Sopot culture. Their sites have been found in the modern-day country of Croatia, specifically, it's eastern Slavonia is the region of Croatia they're in. There are also a few sites located across the border in what is now Hungary, but most of their early sites are located entirely within Croatia. The name comes from the type site of Vinkovci Sopot. And Sopot comes from a Proto-Slavic word that literally translates as a place that echoes. And in several modern Slavic tongues, it's used to mean spring, like a source of water, spring. The peoples who lived at the Sopot sites were primarily descendants of the Starchevo peoples. And like the Linear pottery culture, they emerged as kind of a separate entity right around the same time as the Linear pottery culture did, so around 5,500 BC. And so something must have happened around this time to cause a break in the cultural connection or continuation between both groups and the Starchevo. It's possible it could have had something to do with them absorbing nearby hunter-gatherer groups. DNA for several individuals at Hungarian support sites have been found, and they were actually able to test these. And while most of their DNA is made up of early European farmer descendants, from groups from the Middle East and Anatolia, they could have had as much as 10% Western hunter-gatherers. There's also, they could have had a little bit of steppe herders as well, though this is very small, and it's possible that they could have had ancestors of people who will eventually become steppe herders in there as well. But this is a very small portion. It could be as little as 4%, or this could be a false positive. And they could just be related to relatives of people who would become steppe herders. But it's not a huge sample size either, so this should be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt. Now, the Sopot will outlast both the Linear pottery culture and the Starchevo. Their sites will continue till around 3,800, so into next season, though several of their sites are abandoned between 4,400 and 4,000 BC, so they are getting smaller during the course of this season, and we'll talk about more later, but probably later next season. Their locations are between the Starchevo and later the Vinča cultures and the Linear pottery culture sites meant that they were important links in the trade networks between those sites. And they also probably had access to cultures further west in what is now Italy, Austria, places like that. But we'll go over more of those cultures later. Their pottery resembles the Starchevo in terms of size and shape, but as time goes on, they do begin to incorporate artistic designs very similar to those used by the linear pottery culture. Strong lines and indented dots, things like that. Though, from the examples I've seen, they didn't have the same variety of colors of pottery as the linear pottery culture. Theirs typically tended to be kind of a brown. But they would also paint them red, but that's not the color of the pottery itself. That's just painted on with ochre. They also had access to obsidian, though they would use this for tools and trade, of course. And their economy was very similar to what we've seen to the Starchevo and the linear pottery culture, primarily based on agriculture with some herding thrown in, most importantly, cattle, though they also had goats and sheep as well. Their homes tended to be small and rectangular, and as time goes on, eventually their primary trade partners, once the Starchevo and the linear pottery culture moves on from their region, their closest links are going to be to the Tisza culture, which we discussed a week or two ago. Yeah, and so that's kind of what I have with the Sapat culture. There's not a lot I could find on them that's really out of the ordinary. They're very similar, like I said, economically speaking, to their neighbors. But they did have their own pottery style, which is what most people associate with material cultures at this point in Europe. So that's kind of the important things about them. But again, we have been able to find some of their DNA and test it, which isn't always easy with some of these early Neolithic European sites. Now we're going to go ahead and move on to some of the remaining cultures that emerge this season. These all take the places of other cultures we've discussed for this section of the podcast, and more or less they all enter the Copper Age toward the end of the season, though as we will see, some produce copper artifacts with more variety and skill than others. And the first of these that we're going to be talking about is the Tisza Pulgar culture. And as you might have guessed from the name, they were located along the Tisza River and probably developed out of the Tisza culture directly. The type site for them is Tisza Pulgar Basatanya, and it is in northeastern Hungary. They also have some sites in Romania as well. Most of what we know about Tisza Pulgar comes from their cemeteries, which is different from, again, these earlier Neolithic cultures where we found very little burials. But the Tisza Pulgar, we have found, they found over 150 graves that they've been able to excavate. Most of the pottery is not painted, but they do polish it. And they would decorate it with designs, not color, but designs. They were also, in addition to being copper workers, they were also able to create gold. One of their graves, which was found in 2022, it contained over 169 gold rings, and these were buried with a woman belonging, of course, to the Tisza Pulgar. Now, this is kind of surprising because, there's the theory that a lot of these early farming communities were matriarchal. We've talked about this several times, though, of course, what matriarchy actually means can differ depending on your location. But, of course, one of those big theories, associated with quote-unquote matriarchy is that they did not have stratified societies. However, this woman obviously is being buried with a large amount of gold rings, and no one else has anything like this that we've discovered. So there was definitely something special about her. What that is, we don't really know, unfortunately. But gold artifacts, they're rare. but they have been found. Most of what we've discovered from the Tisza Pulgar culture is related to their copper. They were able to create coils of copper for brooches, amulets, string, you know, for necklaces, as well as not copper string, but they would run the string through like copper beads or copper spirals. They also had bracelets and, of course, copper tools. And I'll be sure to put examples of the gold that they have found, as well as their copper artifacts, too. Now, the Tisza Pulgar culture lasts about 500 years. They last from about 4,500 to 4,000 BC. And then they enter their next phase of the development, and that culture is known as the, I'm trying not to butcher the name, Bodrog Keretsur culture. And we'll talk more about them next season, but they do emerge right around 4,100, 4,000 BC, and they do show a strong genetic link with the Tisza Pulgar culture. They're most likely direct descendants of the Tisza Pulgar people. But they really up the gold work and, of course, continue producing copper artifacts. Though, again, their gold work is much more, I would say, you can tell that they're much better at working gold than the Tisza Pulgar people are, which, you know, makes sense. You have 500 years to work on it, but gold becomes more important over time, as well as their economy expands. They get to some larger sites before they are eventually replaced as well. But again, we'll talk more about them next season when we get back to this area of the world. Now, the Tisza Pulgar are not the only descendants of the Tisza culture. As I said, the Tisza Pulgar are primarily more northeastern Hungary, but there is another culture that's kind of in the southwest of Hungary, and this culture is known as the Lingyel culture, and they last from about 5,000 to 4,000 BC. They are also working with gold and copper. They have... some of their gold work is very interesting. It's like circles within circles. And I'll be sure to put some pictures up of those. Probably used as amulets or maybe like parts of other attached to like string or things like that. But their pottery is also very simplistic. They don't paint it, though they do have some designs. They also kind of continue the work with the statuary. But they also are including animal motifs as well. There is I think it's a ram kind of statue, though that has been found in the north in what is now Poland. So there is evidence, again, of large scale and long trade links. So some of their artifacts have been found outside of Hungary. They would also make copper beads and things like that. Their copper work may be some of the earliest in Europe. It's kind of debated. Some people claim they're the first, but again, I think we've seen some others that are maybe slightly earlier. But they do show a lot more variety in their early copper work than some of their other sites. They were also miners. They set up mines for chert. In addition to, that may be where they were finding their copper. Chert, if you're not aware, is kind of like a white stone. It's kind of like a quartz. Kind of like a white quartzy stone. And it's, you know, if you polish it up, it looks really nice. So probably be what they were using it for. And it's one of the things that they were trading. They also had interactions with the Sapat culture, as well as other neighbors of the Tisza, and of course, people to the north in Poland. We'll talk about them more later. They also would use longhouses, very similar to the Tisza culture, though theirs are less symmetrical. I've seen them described as trapezoid. although I couldn't find any good reconstructions of their houses the same way I could with the Tisa culture. Their humanoid figures are very similar to what you see with the Tisa Polgar culture, though they're, again, their copper artifacts and things like that are a little bit different, as are their gold works. Pottery is very similar.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
We've also found some burials for their people as well. Their people are typically buried on their sides in that kind of fetal position. And I know I mentioned that they were primarily in kind of southwestern Hungary, but they did have some other sites a little bit further north, or at least sites with a lot of their artifacts. Now, how closely related they are, some people debate that, but they do have locations in what is now, potentially have locations in what is now Czechoslovakia, or the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Austria, which, you know, would obviously help with the trade with the places in Poland that we mentioned. Now, their economy, very similar to what we've discussed. I know I mentioned mining. This is something that people of both sexes worked in. They have found women's remains. They had been trapped in a collapsing mine, and the women had, you know, markers on their bones that showed like early arthritis and a lot of injuries associated with people who mine for a good portion of their lives. So this isn't something that's just being done by men, which, you know, does kind of play into the idea that maybe this is a more egalitarian society, though, again, they do have some distinctions based on grave goods. Also, while they do bury people in the fetal position, they did not necessarily have a specific way they like to face their dead. You know, we've talked about some people who, you know, have faced their dead towards the rising sun. This is not something that you see at the Lingil sites. These people were buried one way or the other. They didn't have a direction that they specifically faced their dead. And much like the Tisa Polgar culture, they disappear right around the same time, 4000 BC. Now, there are a couple of other neighboring cultures to the Tisa Polgar and the Lingil culture, and we'll talk about them now because they are still in the Balkans. And this is the Petreshti culture, as well as the Desia Muresuli culture, and I hope I didn't butcher that. And these are considered Transylvanian cultures. They have some overlap between like the southeast of Hungary as well as what is now modern day Romania. Kind of nestled up into the Carpathian Mountains. The Petreshti culture seems to have come first. The dates on the Petreshti culture are kind of interesting. You see some sources say they're around like they're maybe an early offshoot of the Tisa. But then there are some that say they're just contemporaneous with the Tisa Polgar culture. So it's kind of hard to find good English sources for how long they last. But typically they are said to have disappeared around 3,900. And they don't have a huge number of sites that they've discovered, but again, they're kind of nestled up in the mountains. They are descendants, probably primarily of, you know, Anatolian farmers, very similar to the Tisa culture in terms of genetics. They have pottery. It's typically red. The pottery itself isn't red. It's more of a white, but they did paint it red. They would also later do kind of a brown red and then just brown with like sometimes like a kind of a brick red background color. And they would include geometric designs, squares, spirals, rhombuses, things like that. And they did have some access to copper, though their copper work isn't very detailed. It seems to be mostly beads. Once they disappear, they're kind of neighbors to another culture known as the Dacia Murasuli culture. There is some debate if this culture is a breakaway for the Patresti, or if they are linked to maybe people coming in from the steppe. The reason for this is that there have been burials at the Dacia sites where the burial looks more like something you would see like in what is now south Ukraine. Their dead have red ochre scattered over them, or they have balls of ochre kind of placed over their feet. Some of their tools appear maybe to be steppe inspired, though of course they're made with local materials. They have like a stone mace head that keeps coming up if you search for a Dacia Murasuli artifacts. It's like the main thing that comes up if you Google image search their artifacts. That's something that, you know, typically is not associated with any of the other kind of early Copper Age, late Neolithic sites that we've been discussing the last couple of weeks. Both the Dacia Murasuli and the Patresti cultures, they typically are dated to end right around 3,900, give or take 100 years or so, one way or the other. Now, the Dacia, they get to where they are right around 4,500, give or take. So they've got about a 700-year run. Not quite as long as the Patresti, but, you know, fairly close. So these two groups are, they're both kind of in the same general range. So there's some overlap between them and the Tisa Pulgar, as well as the Lingil cultures. So there's a lot of trade links between all of these groups. And like the Patresti, the Dacia Murasuli culture, they have some copper artifacts, though again, doesn't seem to be the same level that what you see with the Lingil or the Tisa Pulgar sites. Now, there is one culture that I did not include a few weeks ago when we were talking about the Boyan and the Cucuteni Tripolye culture. And the reason for this is it's kind of hard to place them because we don't really have any settlements for these people. We've only found their graves, and their graves are different from what you see in any of the other places. But this maybe is the source of the, or at least a route that the ancestors of the Dacia peoples took, if indeed they were from the steppe. And this is called the Suvorovo culture. This kind of occupies the Black Sea coast, and there's some overlap between them and the Boyan culture, if you remember them, also known as the Giulesti Merida culture, which we talked about a few weeks ago. These people are believed, again, to have come from the steppe. There are some theories that this could have been like a very, very early migration of the Proto-Indo-European peoples, or at least people related to the Proto-Indo-Europeans. They buried their dead, sometimes with the legs bent, sometimes with them extended, but they also used red ochre in their burials. And some of these burials have kurgans. Now, these are not the large, elaborate kurgans that, you know, you typically associate with the Proto-Indo-Europeans. These are very similar to those early kurgans that we talked about in our steppe episodes. Sometimes there were not stones placed over the graves, but merely like large logs that were found. The skeletons were buried with grave goods, knife, flint, things like that. There was also both male and female graves that had been found. And the females, they had knives as well as the males. They also had some copper tools. They had a copper awl, which is a leatherworking tool. So they are at least trading with them, if not, producing their own copper artifacts. They're also buried with pottery from all of their neighbors. Some have been buried with the Gumalnida Carnovo pottery. Some will be buried with Cucuteni Tripolie pottery. And then they have that shell tempered pottery from the steppe. And some graves have all three. Some graves have a combination of one or the other. And then some, will just carry one type. So they're maybe not necessarily producing their own, but they're obtaining pottery through some means. They do have, interestingly enough, they do have some artifacts that are not found in any of the Neolithic Balkan sites. These are horse-headed scepters, is what they're referred to as. Though if they were scepters or not, who can say? But they are horse heads, essentially carved out of stone. They may have also had some made from wood, but of course those typically degrade. But I'll try and put some pictures up from them as well. But they're not a very long-lasting culture. This kind of burial practice really only exists for about a 400-year period, between 4,400 and 4,000 BC, give or take, again, 100 years one way or the other. But, it does show that the people of the steppe are still migratory, even if they're not true horseback riders. And even if these people are not, Proto-Indo-Europeans, they're probably related to the people who are Proto-Indo-Europeans. So there's a level of continuity with the long-scale migrations from those people. But they're typically southern Ukraine, Moldova, Romania, right along the Black Sea coast on the western end of the Carpathian Mountains and where the Danube enters into the Black Sea. And they overlap, again, with cultures we've already discussed and talked about in detail. So they're not really taking up the land. They're not establishing settlements nearby, at least from what we can see. Because again, all we can find are their graves. So they may have been, evolved with the long scale trade with the Balkans and the steppe. They may have been kind of this bridge, same way the Sapat culture is between the Balkans and kind of further north into Central Europe. Let's see, where are we? Okay, yeah, it's only 27 minutes. Didn't get quite as long as I thought it would. I know I kind of rushed through some stuff there, but unfortunately, some of these cultures have a little bit less material on them. But I think this is a decent size episode. Pardon me for that cough there. I'll try to cut that out. I think this is a good place to call it. And we did get through all of the cultures I wanted to talk about, which is great. So that means we'll be able to move on to Greece and the western edge of Anatolia, as well as the Greek and Aegean islands. We'll go ahead and start those. This section probably won't be quite as long, not because there's not a lot of stuff going on, but there just aren't quite as many cultures to focus on just yet, though there are, of course, some variations to go over. I appreciate you all coming out. We will have, you guys will hear it, the new music. I hope you enjoy it. I'd like to hear your feedback on it, see what you guys think. But if you have any other constructive criticism, questions, comments, anything like that, feel free to let me know at war@revpod@gmail.com. You can also contact me via direct message on Twitter /X. You can also leave a comment on the YouTube videos. I will get those messages and I will try to respond as quickly as I can. But yeah, I appreciate you all coming by this week. It's been a long weekend for yours truly. I also stream on YouTube, Twitch. So if you see me live on either of those locations, you're welcome to come by and say hey. If you want to send me a link or anything, though, you're going to have to do that via email or via Twitter. YouTube does not like you putting links into the chat. Anyway, thank you all again for joining me. I hope you have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you're listening to this. And I will see you all next time. Peace.